Hello and welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sider, joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider, and you can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you haven't already at Locked On PHX Suns. We have a very special guest for you guys today. It's Michael Pina of Vice Sports. Michael, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, guys. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. I know you wrote, we connected earlier via the Bright Side of the Sun Twitter page after you, a really, really good article you wrote about Mikal Bridges and Summer League. Just if you're able to expand a little bit further on that, you wrote a lot of good stuff about Mikal in that story. And one really interesting quote I took away from that was when you asked him about if Mikal Bridges could be one of the 10 best shooters in the NBA. And his response was, quote, "There's a lot of great shooters in the NBA. You can say top 10, but I just know I have confidence in myself where every time I catch him, I'm going to make it." There's a lot of just stuff that really stood out to me in that article you wrote about Mikal. So what was it like talking to him?
So I guess I should start by just saying that I don't watch college basketball at all. And so, you know, I kind of entered the subject not knowing too much about Mikal's game or who he was or really anything. I mean, I saw the national championship game. And that was about it. And I knew how old he was. And I knew, you know, just from reading pre-draft material and watching a few highlight reels, you know, I knew that he was an NBA ready player now he was one of the types of prospects who's high floor, low ceiling relative to, you know, a more one and done type of prospect who's, you know, a teenager. So I went in knowing that, and, you know, my angle was basically that, you know, why couldn't this dude, who everyone kind of just thinks is a 3-and-D prospect, and that's kind of what he'll be, maybe a Trevor Ariza type of player, why can't he be more than that? And, you know, from just watching how effortless his jumper is, how long he is on the defensive end, his willingness to improve and his work ethic that has helped him improve every single year in college to, you know, be a role player from going to his role in his first year at Villanova as a, you know, off the bench type of player to someone who can create a little bit for others, create his own shot, really flourish in transition. Little bit of a post game. So he's added things to his repertoire over the years. And I just kind of figured, you know, he should be able to continue to improve once he gets to the NBA level and is really focused on just improving and working on his game every single day. You know, I asked around a bunch of people once I knew I was going to write about him. And the first thing everybody said was, you know, he's one of the better shooters. And more effortless shooters in the draft. And obviously in today's NBA, what you need is, you know, guys who can space the floor, guys who can knock down threes, guys who can knock down threes when they are stationary, but then also on the move, which is incredibly valuable. And that's something that Mikal is able to do. So I was talking to one writer who really loves and follows college basketball, who is a fan of Mikal's game, and he kind of gave me the line about how he's J.J. Redick, except versatile on the defensive end enough to guard three positions, which I just sums it up in a nutshell. Is that's a very, very special player if that's what he can be. And, you know, in talking to him about his jumper, you know, he just oozed confidence. I mean, he knows, you know, he's consistent with his form in catch and shoot situations. He's working on ways to be a better pull up threat, and, you know, given his incredible wingspan and his ability to get shots off high with the high release, you know, I think the sky's the limit for this guy.
What do you think of that J.J. Redick comparison? I mean, I know you said you didn't follow his career super intently, but you had some summer league stuff in there. I'm assuming you saw a decent amount of him there. He had that amazing first game. Because we had Jonathan Sharks on from The Ringer, and he also used that comparison. So it seems like
Sharks,
it's
the guy. Yeah, that's Sharks was the one who told me. Yeah.
Okay.
I stole it from
him. I actually thought that when I was reading it. I was like, that's really funny, because he used that literally like last week on our show. But, I mean, I guess from your perspective, like, that's a really like a generational type of shooter. Like, do you see that in him? Do you think it's just a matter of those types of guys? They're kind of a once in a generation thing because of how hard they work. Like, is that where you're coming from thinking he can reach that pinnacle?
I mean, Redick is, I mean, that's a, that's a bar right there, that if he were to reach that, that would be incredible. I mean, he's a 40 career 41% three-point shooter. He shot, I'm looking at his numbers now, he shot 47% from deep, led the league 2 years ago. Yeah. So he's incredible. And I mean, if you just look at how much money he made last season, it was a 1 year deal, but you know, he earned that money because he's one of the better 3-point shooters in league history. And he's someone who is excellent, you know, running off baseline screens and pin downs and really making defenders work. He's constantly scurrying around in a half court setting. And he was so valuable to the Philadelphia 76ers last season. And all those years with, you know, playing out of designed half-court sets with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin with the Clippers. So if he, I mean, if Mikal Bridges were to be that good, which I'm not necessarily expecting, I'm not really expecting anybody to come out of college and have that type of career just because, you know, you don't see that very often. If he were to have that sort of success beyond the arc, I mean, given how, you know, given his body type and his, you know, Redick is someone who can get kind of punished on the defensive end, on switches and in mismatch situations in the playoffs. You know, the Celtics really attacked him, in the second round this year. If Bridges is able to shoot that well and not get damaged and bullied on the defensive end, then that is an incredibly valuable player. I don't necessarily know if it equals, you know, him being an all-star. But, you know, as someone who is able to contribute to a winning situation, that's the exact type of player that you want on your team.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you mentioned, obviously, the book on Bridges heading into the draft. Probably the reason that he ended up slipping to 10 when he's one of the more talented guys, more productive guys in the class, was that he was there for 4 years. That comparison to that similarity to Redick is kind of interesting, too, when you think about it that way, that you said it's really like the odds are against you to ever have a career as great as what Redick has put together. But in a way, Bridges might be closer to that type of guy than most people are.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, personally, I'm not really, you know, when a guy enters the league at 21 or 22, you know, I really don't understand the narrative of, you know, he's a finished product. You know, I think that the NBA today, how often guys work in the off season and just, you know, the environment that, you know, the attitude and the environment in summertime when, you know, guys are not resting in July and in August and in September. They're not going on vacations. They're working on their bodies. They're working on their games constantly. That's kind of the culture of NBA offseason right now. So I don't really buy, you know, you come in the league at 22 and you have a lower ceiling than someone who comes in the league at 19 necessarily. I really don't. I think it's a case-by-case basis. You know, you look at some guys recently in the NBA who have made unexpected leaps late in their careers, in their late 20s. And I think that that is a trend that will continue. And, you know, it shouldn't be a knock on Bridges for him to enter the league at 22. I think that, you know, he still has, you know, he compared himself to Paul George and to Kawhi Leonard as guys who entered the league as more spot up threats, and who had to gradually learn how to, you know, operate out of ball screens and run pick and roll and make plays for others. And that's something that he has his eyes set on. So I don't really think that that is, you know, an impossible thing for him to eventually accomplish.
It's ironic how you brought up earlier the Trevor Ariza comparison for him, because as we all know, the Suns did sign Trevor Ariza to a 1 year, $15 million deal. And if you look more at the roster as a whole for the Suns, with Bridges now in there alongside Ariza, Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, how do you see what the Suns are doing and how they're building this roster out with their new head coach, Igor Kokoschka? Because it seems like they're going in more of that modern positionless direction. How do you like how it's going for Phoenix so far?
I mean, I'm a fan. I think that that's how you should be building your basketball team in 2018, heading into 2019 and beyond. You know, when I look at Phoenix's roster, obviously you guys know better than me that, you know, they need a point guard, and that's obviously like the big concern. And it's really hard to have an effective, efficient offense if you don't have an effective, efficient floor general. And I know that Igor has talked about how he does not want Devin Booker to be the point guard. He wants him to play to his strength. So I think they'll have to fill that some way or another. You know, Brandon Knight is on the roster, and we'll see if he can be the answer for at least one season. But when you know, all the guys that you mentioned, Ariza, Josh Jackson, TJ, McHale, I really like just having similarly sized wings who are long, and you know, each of those guys kind of brings a little bit something different to the table. They're not, you know, prototypical 3-and-D guys or you know, wings who can create their own offense. They're kind of all able to mix and match, and I think they'll be able to complement one another a good deal and play with each other. So I like it. I'm a fan. You know, I think the Trevor Ariza one-year, $15 million deal was criticized a little bit, and I didn't see it being that damaging. I think also when you're a young team as Phoenix is and you're growing, you want to add someone with championship experience, a veteran like Ariza, who's, you know, championship habits, coming from a team that could have won the championship last year. I like their roster. I think that they need to shore up the point guard position, but other than that, you know, they're very intriguing.
Yeah, it really is sort of crazy thinking about Ariza. Like, not only was he on a team that came, you know, notoriously within like 20 minutes of making an NBA Finals against all odds in some ways, like, he's really been on winning teams throughout his career. That's not really something a lot of players can say, but obviously, on the whole, though, this Suns team is still very young and got even younger, even though it seemed like they might go in a different direction. Ariza is really the only veteran they added, really the only veteran who's going to play consistent minutes outside of whatever Brandon Knight's able to contribute. But you had a quote in your piece. You called the Suns a team with a quote, unmarked canvas. And after talking to Bridges and getting a feel for what he's going to bring to the team, what his priorities are coming into the league as a first-year player, do you think it's better for Bridges? Obviously, he was thought he was a Sixer, and that's kind of what you talk about at the beginning of the piece. For half an hour, an hour on draft night, he's giving interviews, talking to all these other teams or other people about being a 76er, and then all of a sudden he's not. Like, do you think, from what you heard from him, that he would have been more successful in Philadelphia? Or do you think an opportunity like the one with he'll have with the Suns to really kind of earn a role and do as much as he can is better for him?
I think he's honestly, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but to be honest, I think just in terms of on the basketball floor, I think he's more excited about being in Phoenix. Being in Philadelphia, you know, his role would have been very restricted to catching, you know, kick-out passes from Ben Simmons, spreading the floor for Joel Embiid and playing off post-ups. There'd be very little opportunity, I think, for him to have the ball in his hands and create.
He's sort of just Covington, too, on that team, I guess.
Exactly. He'd be replicating Robert Covington in a lot of ways on both ends. And, you know, that means getting a ton of, you know, spot up looks from beyond the arc and a lot of open shots too, which is fun. And, you know, having a clearly defined role as a rookie, I think that would make his entrance into the NBA pretty seamless. But, you know, I think it is more of a thrill to go into Phoenix where not a lot of stuff is settled right now. You know, I don't even think that they have a set starting lineup or a set rotation or anything like that. And, you know, I think as a rookie, McHale will probably be more of a 3-and-D player, playing off Devin Booker and kind of doing exactly what I just said for Embiid with DeAndre Ayton a little bit. But, you know, as he is able to progress, there's really no one standing in his way at the wing position, maybe Josh Jackson, but, you know, someone who can run a secondary or even a primary pick and roll with Devin Booker, on the weak side or something like that. I think that would be really interesting. Whereas in Philly, you know, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are two kind of pillars of that franchise. They're not going anywhere. The ball needs to be in their hands at all times and will have to be in their hands going forward. You know, I think there's some players on Phoenix who may be able to potentially play off the ball a little bit more, depending on how fast and how successful Ridge's evolution is. So, I think Phoenix creates definitely more possibilities and more opportunities for him. And I mean, speaking for myself, if I were him and coming into the NBA, I would be probably a little bit more excited about Phoenix's situation than Philadelphia's.
Now, you also spoke about in your story the relationship between Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart and how Mikal sort of grinded his way up through Villanova. And once Josh Hart left, he took on the role that Hart did leave once he went to the Lakers. But it seems like Mikal Bridges is sort of driven by that sort of competition. He's going to be stepping into a very similar role now with TJ Warren and Josh Jackson. Is that just going to make him even better from just you speaking and talking for a little bit? He's just motivated by that sort of competition?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, he's going to be battling those guys for minutes long-term with the team, obviously. I would imagine that the Suns are pretty high on Josh Jackson. They just drafted him with the fourth overall pick last year. TJ Warren, they gave along an extension to. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. So, you know, obviously he'll be battling those guys for minutes, and depending on how Igor wants to play, I don't know if all three of those guys will be able to see the floor at the same time going forward, depending on, you know, what Trevor Ariza's future is with this team. But I think, you know, competing against those guys every day in practice, the Villanova assistant coach was talking to me about how he knew that Mikal would be a first round pick the second that, you know, he saw him every day in practice defending Josh Hart better than any of the opponents on other teams would during games. So that's just a thing, you know. Mikal will have an opportunity to, you know, guard Devin Booker, who is one of the brightest young scorers in basketball. And, you know, something that kind of popped out to me, which is really interesting, was just that Mikal and Devin kind of knew each other from high school because they're in the same high school class. So they would match up in, you know, various camps in AAU and that sort of thing. So that was really interesting. But yeah, so I do think that, you know, that could drive him a little bit. Of course, at this level, you know, these guys are obviously motivated by a lot of other factors as well, and there's really nothing that's going to stop him from continuing to work on his game regardless.
So you mentioned you spoke with Ashley Howard, who worked with Bridges at Villanova, and did you get any sort of idea of whether the camaraderie and obviously the prolific kind of crazy success that program has had over the past 3-4 seasons had on him? I mean, is that something that these guys, now that they're all kind of coming into the NBA, did you get any sense of how much that, you know, it, I don't know about drives him, because like you said, like these guys work hard every day. He's gotten so much better since his freshman season, but these guys are all kind of coming in, Josh Hart and Mikal Bridges, Amari Spellman, Jalen Brunson, these Villanova guys who won so much together are now in the NBA. Did you talk to him about that at all?
Not so much, but I mean, you know, I think his experience at Villanova, with the most interesting part was just, you know, when he started, he redshirted his freshman year because he was basically too skinny to play college basketball. And so he's kind of going up against his coaches and going up against teammates in practice that were, you know, one of the more respected programs in the country. And to finally work his way into a role as a sophomore, they win the national championship, and then just to continue to build kind of up that ladder and go up against these guys like Josh Hart in practice, Chris Jenkins also, that obviously you're basically just, you know, sharpening your skill set against some of the better players in college basketball. I think Josh Hart was probably the best player in college basketball when they were teammates. So that's definitely a benefit. Whereas, you know, in a different situation, maybe he's kind of just the lone attraction. You know, he was forced to compete in kind of a dog-eat-dog environment, and that's, you know, that's beneficial, going back to what you just said about, you know, playing on the same team as Josh Jackson and TJ Warren and guys who are at the same position.
Now, pivoting over here to more general Suns NBA discussion, I wanted to ask you, I know I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, Michael, but with the Suns' young core now of Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Josh Jackson, Mikal Bridges, and others, how do you see them stacking up against the other quote-unquote young, attractive cores in the NBA?
I like it a lot. I am a big fan of Devin Booker. I understand his flaws. I was in house the night that he scored 70 points in Boston, and that was just awesome to see. He's an incredible talent. So signing him to that extension, I thought was a no-brainer and a definite win for the Phoenix Suns. That's someone who can be a franchise player, in my estimation, and he should improve on the defensive end as he gets a little bit more help on the offensive side of the ball, and he can lessen his responsibilities. If I'm looking around at just, really young, exciting teams, obviously you have Philadelphia, we already mentioned, with Simmons and Embiid. Those are two potential perennial All-NBA players at important positions with really unique skill sets. And then the Boston Celtics come to mind, with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart. That team is expected to go to the NBA Finals this season. So they're at the top of the list there. I'm trying to bounce around the league in my head here. The Lakers, obviously, they have intriguing youngsters. I would actually say that I think Phoenix's youth movement is a little bit more intriguing to me than what the Lakers have with Lonzo and Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart, who we just talked about, and Kyle Kuzma. I would probably take Phoenix's core over LA's, which is interesting, I guess, because LeBron James chose the Los Angeles Lakers. There's a lot of interesting. Denver is another one who I really love. That's Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray and Gary Harris. That has the makings of a playoff team right away. So I think when you just kind of look out and compare them to other young cores, the thing that Phoenix kind of has going against it is just they're not expected to make the playoffs even in the Western Conference, and that's a little bit debilitating. It's easy to kind of have them be overshadowed by other young cores that are assisted by, I think, more established talent. All the teams that I just mentioned, except maybe Philly, even though Philly has plenty of capable veterans on that roster, and that was a huge reason why they made the playoffs last season. So I think, we'll see how much of an impact Ariza has. We'll see if Brandon Knight can bounce back and be a capable point guard coming off that torn ACL injury. But besides that, it's like there's just so much youth on this roster that it's really difficult to kind of just say that they're going to compete for a playoff spot. And, with so many interesting teams, especially in the Western Conference, that will be competing for a playoff spot, they tend to get overshadowed just a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely don't think missing the playoffs, or I just don't think in general the playoffs should be used as the barometer for this team this year. Or really, there's going to be some good teams who miss the playoffs, and there's going to be some teams who can take a step forward this year and still miss the playoffs. Dallas, I think Denver really, really hopes they make it, but it wouldn't be the biggest surprise if they didn't. So I think especially for the Suns and how young they are, it's not necessarily failure if they improve by quite a bit but still fall short of the eight seed. And I think that's, probably what will end up happening. But a big part of the optimism or negativity you might have about the Suns obviously lands with the number one overall pick, DeAndre Ayton. And then you were at Summer League watching the Suns. What were your thoughts of him, just seeing him for the first time as someone who probably, too, didn't see him a ton in college?
He's a physical specimen, for sure. I try to look at these guys as unhealthy as it is and inaccurate. I try to look at these guys through the prism of, NBA comps and, take an NBA skill set and maybe add the three-point shot. And that's kind of what you get with Ayton. So, potentially, he didn't really flash that too much at Summer League, but, I think he could be Andre Drummond with a three-point shot, which is a pretty interesting basketball player. If he hits that ceiling, is that worth the number one pick when you had some other really fascinating prospects in this draft? I guess time will tell. But, if he can, I should probably start by just saying real quick that, you know, Summer League, it's, I'm personally not a huge fan of using it to make sweeping statements, especially for big men. It's like it's such a guard heavy, guard dominant environment, and he's kind of at the mercy of guys on his team setting him up in a lot of situations. And sometimes he would catch the ball, you know, 15 feet from the basket, elbow extended, and have to create his own shot with 10 seconds on the shot clock. And, you know, that's a situation where you're just kind of set up for failure. So I thought that was a little bit of a tricky wall for him to break through. But physically, the way he moved was pretty impressive. You know, he got up for lobs several times. I think defensively, he can stand to improve, and he'll ultimately be judged as for how dominant he can be on that end of the floor, just because that's what seven-footers are judged on in the NBA. So we'll see. We'll see how quick he can be, maybe even on the perimeter, defending pick-and-rolls on switches. I don't know if that's realistic or not. But, you know, if he can, you know, having a franchise big that large, who can be that imposing potentially, that's definitely something that you want on your team as you're trying to build towards the playoffs.
And his obvious 1-2 combo he's going to have with them for the long term, Phoenix, we Devin Booker. Just what's your overall thoughts on Booker as a player? Because Brendan and I last year expected him to take a big jump. I don't think we expected him to go 24-4-4. He's really adding a lot more playmaking ability than I thought he had. So, do you think it's fair to say that, I know it's really early in the process of his career, even though he's on his fourth NBA season, just signed his max contract, but do you think there's any sort of James Harden parallels with Devin Booker?
Yeah, I don't think that's insane. I mean, it's you're basically being like, you know, will Devin Booker be a perennial MVP candidate? And, you know, James Harden, what makes him so dominant on the offensive end is just his physicality, in my opinion, and his ability to get to the free throw line. He's obviously added the step back three was the big thing that he had in his bag last season that kind of put him over the top in the MVP race. But I think Devin Booker's ability to get to the free throw line more and more, and he's kind of increased that a little bit throughout his career. I'm checking out the numbers now, so that's a good thing. He's already has a really picturesque 3-point stroke. He can shoot it in a lot of different situations. He can create his own shot. He improved as a playmaker last season in ways that I didn't expect this early in his career. I think the big knock, obviously, again, is the defensive end, and he just can't be like the worst defender on the floor. If he can be passable more often than not, and not be clueless in help situations, and, you know, not give up in on-ball situations as much as he did last year, which I think he was sometimes in unfair spots because of just how Phoenix's roster was built, and, you know, the addition of Bridges and, you know, Jackson in year two and Trevor Ariza will really make life easier for Devin Booker on that end, which should only improve his play on the offensive end, I think. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to, it's a very bold claim to compare anyone to one of the five best players in the world. But it's not insane to look at what he's done already at this young age and say, sure, this dude can win an MVP, or this dude can be at least a perennial contender for the scoring title.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like, obviously, with Devin Booker's game. If he does develop more on the playmaking end there, I think there could be some sort of parallels with Harden, but that's obviously down the line. But I'll get you out here on this final question, Michael. Appreciate the time today, but For 2019, I know we're looking a little bit ahead here to next summer already with the Phoenix Suns, but they are projected to have max cap space. They let go of Brandon Knight and or TJ Warren alongside one of Marquise Chris and Dragan Bender. So what's just your overall thoughts on, like we mentioned throughout the podcast, this Suns young core has to develop at a good rate this summer to really attract big names. Like, really, a guy like Terry Rozier, who plays in Boston, restricted free agent, makes a lot of sense next summer if they want to, but that point guard situation is the really murky part of this entire core right now. So how do you expect this season to go? And do you think the Suns are attractive enough with Booker, Ayton, and all these young guys to maybe get like a big fish like Kyrie Irving or Kemba Walker or something like that to at least listen to them.
Well, speaking of someone who grew up in Boston and is still a Celtics fan, you're really cutting into my heart right now with the Terry Rozier mention and Kyrie Irving. I mean, stay away, please. You know, actually, like, when I look at how this team can improve and build out at the point guard position, it depends on their timeline and how fast they want to get better. You know, are they going to be super aggressive in a way where they add someone who is a little bit older, like Paul Millsap with the Denver Nuggets a couple years ago, that type of signing, except at the point guard position. You know, I think that given the plethora of wings that they have, if they wanted to strike a trade for a Kemba Walker or a Kyle Lowry, probably not Lowry anymore. That's a bad example, but someone like Kemba Walker, or, you know, another name is kind of slipping my head right now, but getting a point guard through the trade market, maybe dangling one of those youngsters, you know, the number one guy who comes to my head would be Josh Jackson if Mikal Bridges kind of exceeds expectations early on this season. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Rozier. I think, you know, I'm a huge fan of Terry Rozier's game, and it'll be very difficult for the Celtics to keep him, obviously, even though he's going to be restricted. You know, they're going to be very deep into the luxury tax, most likely, next season. And it'll be interesting to see how much their ownership is willing to pay. So that's definitely an option. Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be a lot of interesting talent on the market next year. And, you know, I think that Phoenix would have to really exceed expectations to land, you know, one of the actual legitimate superstars, if that's where they were trying to, if that's kind of where they were hunting. But, you know, beyond next summer, you know, the summer after that, you know, if they're able to keep their books clear, they could be, for sure, a very interesting free agent destination.
Bernie, do you have any more questions today for Michael?
No, I think that's it. I appreciate the time, and I hope we don't steal your point guard, but, I mean, it does seem like somebody's going to.
Well, hopefully not. Can I, before we go, can I ask you guys what your thoughts would be on a potential, I'm just curious, on a potential deal for someone like, let's say, Kemba Walker? Let's say that it was the headliner from your end would be Josh Jackson headed to Charlotte. Would that be, you know, would that be intriguing on your end?
Bern, you can go first on that.
Yeah, I think to me, it's exactly what you said, which, they keep drafting these guys with overlap. I mean, we haven't even talked about Dragan Bender and Marquise Chris and what needs to still be figured out with those two guys. But now they have this other, not only TJ Warren, but Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges kind of all not really competing. I think they might be able to play together, but, like, you know, you kind of have to see who you like more, and that decision's coming sooner rather than later. So if one of these guys pops, then the others are expendable. So I don't know what that does from a point of leverage in a trade, but I definitely think you have so many guys now, even if it's just from a consolidation to get a better player at a position you don't have, which now is pretty much just point guard, I think it makes some sense. Jackson's a lot, but, you know, I think that might be what it takes.
Yeah, on my end, I feel like it does make more sense if, like we mentioned, Mikal does get off to a hotter start than we imagine. He's the better shooter, and he develops more playmaking. I think he could make Jackson expendable down the line, but I think it will take one of Josh Jackson or one of these other young guys to get Kemba Walker out of there, probably alongside a pick, but I think with Ryan McDonough, we have to factor that in as well, because he only has about 18 months left on the job with his contract. He's got to be feeling some sort of pressure here soon about making the playoffs. It's going to be 10 years for the Suns without making the playoffs, so there's got to be some sort of traction here soon. I've been thinking to myself in the back of my head that a trade in some sort of capacity like that, maybe for like a Damian Lillard or a Kemba Walker, is probably the most realistic sort of option for them to take.
Yeah, or Chark saying CJ, he like dropped that bombshell, and Evan and I had to respond to it on the air. But that something like something like that, I think, makes some sense, too. Like you were saying with Millsap, maybe like a second-tier guy that's more in there to support the other guys. You hope that those guys become the stars, but that's a little more risky. You wait a little longer to compete, I think.
No, and I mean, I wrote about this the other day with, you know, Kevin Love's extension, which I don't buy as him, you know, something that's going to anchor him in Cleveland for that entire, the length of that entire contract. You know, that's kind of the type of, if the type of player and the type of transaction that could be made by a team like Phoenix. I don't know if it's smart to give up young pieces and future assets for someone like Kevin Love, but that's kind of the type of player and situation that Phoenix could be attracted to if they were to feel that pressure and need to make the playoffs sooner than later.
Yeah, Evan talks about the connection with him and James Jones a lot, too, as something that could eventually make Love think about Phoenix a little harder than some other worse situation, too.
Oh, very interesting. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
That's a good call.
All right, hey, I appreciate your time today, Mike. We're going to end it on that. But anything else you wanted to plug? I gave you just the last minute or so if you want to plug anything you wanted to.
No, not really. I mean, anyone who wants to follow me on Twitter at Michael V. Pina is great. Head on over to vicesports.com where all my work can be found. And, yeah, that's about it. Thank you guys so much for having me on. This was a lot of fun. Good luck to Phoenix next season and next summer.
Yeah, hopefully we don't take Terrier from you, but it might be something that we really think about.
Please stay away.